Okay, thank you for coming out to my session on System Center Operations Manager 2012. We're going to talk about how to make Operations Manager work for you and some practical lessons learned beyond the install. You've all had lunch, so I got a good time slot. Looks like the room's pretty full. I'm pleased to see that. I think you folks will derive some real value out of what I'm going to show you here today using Operations Manager. If you haven't used Operations Manager before, I am going to spend a fair bit of time in the console showing you how to use the console to perform some of these techniques in order to leverage what's already in the box to for maximum benefit for yourself. Now, what's this presentation about? Well, I'm going to talk about some common challenges faced by our customers and an approach to solve them. We're seeing a lot of people who get Operations Manager, and you know, it's touted as a product that you can do a lot with out of the box, and that's true. You do have to do some basic configuration, like anything at all, but you can very much use what comes by default with Operations Manager, and you can get a lot done just from the install. You can get a lot done with your monitoring system. Now, the session is very much about maximizing process manageability and repeatability using common tools. Now, I'm actually going to show one of my demos. I'm actually going to show using Excel to leverage some of what you can do with the console to get some of that benefit. What's this presentation not about? Well, I'm not going to go into things like custom management pack authoring. I'm definitely not going to go into custom report authoring or report creation or cracking Visual Studio. And we're certainly not going to talk about the science in Planet of the Apes, if that's what you're interested in. Now, a funny thing, when I was putting the presentation together, I like to use humor in my slides, so I put up some graphics to do with Planet of the Apes. Now, the folks at Microsoft, for legal reasons, they didn't want to leave that in, but anyway, there's a little bit of a Planet of the Apes theme going on throughout the presentation, so I hope you enjoy that. Now, why should you stay for the rest of my session? Well, if you want to be alerted using Operations Manager on specific things you care about as a top priority, but you still want to know about other issues in the environment, I'll talk about how to do that. If you want to leverage what's in the box for some immediate value, I'll talk about techniques to do that. You also want a monitoring environment that's easy to manage and uses repeatable processes. That's really what we're going into here. So, if that's not what you're here to see, no apology necessary. It's graceful exit time. So peel them if you've got them. All right, looks like everybody's interested. So let's move on. Okay, so I've told you what I'm going to talk about. How am I going to cover it? Well, the way I'm going to cover this session out is I'm going to address inventorying management packs. I'm going to show you some techniques how to actually take a look at the management packs in your environment and get a quick inventory of what's going on there, and then you can leverage that information to find out what's being monitored in the environment and make some decisions about that. I'm also going to talk about working with alerts, notifications, some of the reports that come in Operations Manager just when you import the basic management packs, and I'll address dashboards and views. Now, why is it important to inventory management packs? This idea is something that I talk to my customers about a fair bit. You can use what's in the box for some base monitoring, server up, down, some basic services if you import the Windows management pack. All that stuff comes, you know, with practically no configuration at all. However, it is real important to know what it is that you're getting into, right? If you automatically assume, for example, that when you install a program and the services that get installed with that program, that you're going to be alerted if that service goes down, that would be a mistake, right? You have to have capability in the program to do that. This comes in form of a management pack. Management packs contain rules and monitors contain a bunch of other stuff as well, like reports and views, but the rules and monitors are the real key players here that we're interested in that actually do the job of monitoring in the environment. And that's really what will give you a sense of confidence that what you think is being done to monitor your environment is actually what is being done. And inventorying the management pack is a pretty important process in getting that list of what's actually being monitored out so that you can make some decisions. You also will, when you inventory the management pack, it'll give you the ability to validate that what you think is being monitored is in fact being monitored. When you look at that list, you can basically tell that, you know, certain key services in the core operating system or whatever management pack that you want to look at, those whether those are monitored, yes or no. And if you structure the query in a specific way, you can actually see default values, such as if they're turned on or not. Okay. Also, if you go into inventorying views and things like that, you can validate whether or not the output of what you're going to see in the console does reflect what you want to see as a service for monitoring. So how do we inventory a management pack? Well, the guides are a good place. Okay, if you have a management pack guides, really you do want to read the guides to know what it is you're getting into. And often there are some very important configuration steps just to get the thing going. Now I am talking about default. So if you bring in, for instance, the in Exchange 2007, if you brought in that management pack and you didn't enable some core discoveries, you weren't going to get very far. Okay, so there's very often you need to go look and decide what is important for your environment and make those base configuration changes to get the job done. Now, inventorying per se, you can get that done using PowerShell, and I'll show you two scripts which are actually available on the MomTeam blog for how to pull out the core rules and monitors which are in your system once you install the specific management packs out there. The main players that you're interested in, and the topic of my demo here, is going to be pulling out the list of rules and monitors, and I'm going to show you a quick demo of that. Now, the commandlet to run for that is actually called, in 2012, it's called getscomrule for rules. For 2007, it's just called getrule. Actually, if you run a help command in PowerShell, you can actually see the equivalencies. If it used to be called getrule, and you want to run that command in 2012, you could actually get command getrule, and it'll show you what the equivalency maps to in 2012. So you would know that the equivalent of that command is now has scom in front of the word rule. But it'll do basically the same thing. And I'll show you how to manipulate those results using Excel. All right. So let's drop into my environment here. Okay, all right, so I'm remoted into our lab environment at Systel. All right, by default, we've got some active alerts here. What I want to do is I actually want to show you the get rule and get monitor commandlets. So let me just fix that for you so you can see it. All right. So the command is actually right here. So it's getscomrule. Now you've got to do a bunch of manipulation in order to format that. What I'm looking to do here is I'm looking to get the rules for all installed management packs in the environment. And what I want to do is I actually want to output that query in form of a CSV file, which I can then take and I can open that using Excel. And I'll show you just with a couple of clicks how easy it is to format that to really get something that's usable, that you can get a list and make some intelligent decisions around whether or not you're actually getting monitored what it is you're looking for, right? So I'll show you how to run that. Now the get monitor command is not terribly different. It's just called get monitor. Now, if I wanted to run it for 2007, I'd just have to remove the word scom and then I'd be ready to go. So what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna copy this command. And I put a 5 in front of rules just because I want to create a new object as the output. And I'll open my PowerShell instance. Okay, and I'll run that command. So let's just make sure it's run. Get scum rule, good, rules5.csv. So I will launch that. Okay, it looks like it ran three times. That's fine. All right. So what that did in the background is it actually created an output file here on my, dropped on my C drive called rules5.csv. So if I go ahead and open that, I'll just pick Notepad to open that with. You can see here that you've actually got a list of two columns, all right? One has the name of the management pack listed here, and the other one actually has the name of the rule. Now, you can pull other properties of those rules out, things like default values and things like that, but this, for the purpose of this demo, this is enough just to show you how to get a quick list of what's going on in that environment. Now, using Excel, you can quickly format that information. So what I'll do is I'll actually drop out to my workstation here. And I've got a copy of the get rules CSV file right here for demonstration. So this is just the same format as what I had. If I open it quickly in Excel, I can format it fairly fast. So I just double click to expand the first column. And since I know that all the parameters are contained in two columns, I'll just double click to quickly format that. Then I'll go into format as table, and I'll pick my table format. I pick the end of my data by hitting Control A and click OK, and that's it. You've now got something that you can actually use to show your department or management a list of actually what's being monitored in the environment. If I want to do that for monitors, it's the same deal, right? I just run the same command. You've now got something that you can make some decisions about for monitoring and make some quick choices on defaults and things like that you want to enable. Why this is real important, I'm going to get into in a bit when I talk about alerts. So that's just a quick technique using some basic default stuff and using Excel. Who doesn't use Excel in the environment, right? So right on your desktop, you can actually produce that type of report that you can use to make some real important decisions in your company. All right. Okay, so let's head back to the slides. Okay, so we'll go on to the next part. So what should you care about with alerts? We're going to talk about working with alerts now. To begin with, you really want the alerts that you're acting on, because this is the information that you get back from the environment, right? If the Exchange server's down, if your print service is stopped or whatever, then you're actually going to get an alert. That's your output in SCOM. You want that information to be actionable. Okay, it means you want to be able to do something about it. The thing is that Operations Manager does gather a lot of information. This intelligence is produced by the product group to start with. So they've met with all their customers, and they've come up with a list of things that they would put in the individual management packs that most people care about. Most people is not specifically you. So for me, most people need to have their environments tuned. So most people, in fact, is not most people when I get on customer sites. Now, if you want to act on the alerts, they have to be relevant to you. So that means that, you know, if you really don't have a process in place to deal with an alert about an Oracle server, maybe you want to figure that out before you start using SCOM to handle the monitoring on it. So really, you want your alerts to be relevant and actionable. And you don't specifically care about all the other stuff that comes in. Now, that said, many times we don't know what we don't know, right? So we may have a big environment, and one of the advantages of putting Operations Manager in place is that we're actually going to get a sort of a real state of systems in our environment. I don't know how many times I show up on a customer site and I'm getting an alert because I can't log into a SQL server. And then when I go to the technical person of that department, I say, well, you know, we need writes for a run-as account to log into your SQL server so we can monitor it. Your management has said it's important for us to monitor all SQL servers. Can you help us out? We need to configure some access. And they'll say, well, we don't have a SQL server on that box. But it's not true. Operations manager will discover SQL instances even if they think it's not there. It may be the free version of SQL that's installed, and it might have been installed by default with some legacy application. They don't always know, right? Now, by default, your first view when you're looking into it is going to be called active alerts. Now, alerts have different states. They can have, by default, there's new and there's closed, right? There's 256 states, which are called resolution states, that you can actually configure. So by default, you're going to see everything that is not closed as an alert in the active alerts. Well, that's a lot of information. It actually bubbles up all of the alerting information from every management pack you have installed by default. Now, that's great for validation, but it's not good for topical, specific, relevant monitoring. You do need to streamline that information so that people see some scoped sense of what's important to them. So effectively, this is what you're getting. You're getting pandemonium, right, from that active alerts view. But wouldn't you rather something like this? Nice, orderly environment. All right. So using the management pack inventory, you're actually going to get a listing of what's there by default. Now, I did say the guides are there too, but you know, like a lot of IT pros, not everybody reads the guides right away. You know, guilty. But we do read them if something doesn't go right. Now, I try to, but you know, I've been known to not read the guides before starting. Now, what I do suggest is, although that I'm actually saying that that default all alerts view is not specifically relevant for a topical streamlined monitoring environment, it is good for validation. Now, what I mean by that is, say for example, you have a group of Exchange administrators who aren't particularly interested in how SharePoint's running or how the logic if, or space on the logical disks, right? You have a Windows team separate to that that manages all that stuff. Fine. So you would give them access to the Exchange information, and you would give the Windows team access to information that they want. But you still want to know what information is coming into the environment in case you've missed something. That's what the active alerts view is still good for. If you've actually created process and gone through and streamlined what it is that you're monitoring with your rules and monitors, but you missed something, that's going to come up in the active alerts view. So the next time you do some sort of a change review, you may want to put process around that and include that in your monitoring scope and make some changes. In order to get to that point where you get the relevant information, what you want to do is you want to leverage the console to create these scoped user roles. Now, I'll actually show you how to do that as they pertain to alerts, to restrict the information that the people of different responsibilities are looking at, right? So that it's relevant to them and that information comes in that's actionable. And then beyond that, what you can do is you can create notification subscriptions for alerts that come in that are of a top priority to give you that secondary assurance that the information is being monitored. Not everybody uses just alerts to monitor their environment. Okay. Oftentimes, now Operations Manager uses this concept of health state. Okay, so Operations Manager has the management packs that come in. They introduce these things called classes, which are programmatically what it is that they're monitoring, and they implement those rules and monitors to interact with the individual classes. A class can be a user, a class can be a computer, a class can be a logical disk, a class can be memory, a class can be anything really, but that's introduced when you install the management packs. Now, what happens with the health state is that they can be, you know, they can be informational, can be warning, critical, can be healthy. Yeah? Sorry, informational has to do with alerts, not with a health state. Can be healthy, can be warning, can be critical. Those are the three possible health states that you could have. Now, a lot of times, management packs are written such that the alert severity comes in and it's basically matching the health state of the object. Now, some management packs have been rewritten to give you different choices, but oftentimes you're going to run into a management pack where the alert severity matches the health state of the object that comes in. For example, in the case of SQL jobs, I was at a customer site who he actually really cares about specific SQL jobs in the environment. Now, what we did is we structured their monitoring for their company around critical alerts. Critical alerts were going to take some additional actions that the other types of alerts didn't take. Well, by default, the health state of the SQL jobs that were coming in, if a job ran too long or a job failed, it would go from healthy to warning. So that alert did not actually even come in as critical. Okay, so they weren't able to take the appropriate actions. Now, although that is a default in many cases, it's not all the time, and again, your inventory will tell you if this is the case, and I'll demonstrate that you can actually unlink this if it is linked. That's one particular condition I see a lot of on customer sites. And you can structure it to match what it is that you care about. If you're performing action on critical alerts, you can unlink the alert, which is just the message output as a result of a health state. And you can unlink that. I'll show you in the demo how to do that. You can also use the priority field on the alerts to match your business rules. For example, there are three possible values of priority. There's low, medium, and high. Now, what that priority field is used for is really to match the structure of your business. So that this is actually one of the least used fields I see with alerts. So you can manipulate the severity of alerts in different ways, but you can also leverage that priority field. So say, for example, if you wanted to say some types of alerts will be monitored through the console, some types of alerts will be acted on through a copy, which will be a notification subscriptions. And instead of caring about the severity of the alert, you actually leverage that priority field. You would say, things I care about as a top priority, I'm going to say, are high in priority, and you can manipulate all the objects you care about en masse in that way. What you can also do in those, so I recommend this as a temporary circumstance. If you get an alert that comes in and it looks like something that you've missed that you really do care about, you've already got a process in place to handle notifications and alerts, and you actually get an alert that comes in and it's something that you really do care about, you can create a notification subscription based on the rule or monitor that created that alert. Again, I recommend this as a temporary solution, because it's actually going to seriously increase your number of notification subscriptions to manage and document if you do that too often. But it can help you in the short term. You should review the process and include it as part of the overall plan. Okay, so what I'll do is I'll actually show you a demo of the alerts, working with the alerts and what I mean by that. Excuse me. Nope. Let me fix that. Excuse me. All right. Okay. So by default, I was talking about those active alert views that come in. This is the active alerts view that you'll see with most of the information coming in the environment. Now, notice here in my lab, I'm actually getting information from many different sources. Here I'm getting information from the VMM management pack that's installed. I'm getting some hardware information from a Dell management pack that's installed. I'm getting some network information from a Cisco switch that's installed in the lab. That's as a result of the default network monitoring in place there. I'm actually getting some DNS information. I'm getting some IIS information. And I'm getting some information from the operating system as well, all in this view. Very difficult to actually sort through and manage and create process from this default view. You would really want to develop an approach around streamlining what people see and how they act on it to work with your business units and how your company reacts with this stuff, right? What I've also done is, remember that I mentioned that there are, by default, there's two types of alerts. There's the alert resolution states have new and closed. So active alerts is everything that comes in that is not closed. Well, if you want the full accounting picture of alerts in your environment, you should actually also create a closed alerts view that'll go and target alerts that do have resolution state closed. So where this becomes important is if you've got Say, for example, you don't have an on-call system for your job, but you have an admin who comes in a long weekend, and then he just looks at the console and goes, huh, I think that if anything is still going on, it'll come back. So what he does is he clicks the first alert, holds down shift, clicks the bottom alert, says close alert. We're done. If you want to know what actually, if you want to get a picture of what went on in there, you should look at that closed alerts view. Otherwise, you can get at it with reports too. Okay, so streamline view. Now, what I've also done here is I've scoped some user roles to restrict access. Let me show you that here. So in administration, I've created a couple of different user roles to simulate some administrators. So there they are down here. What I've done is I've created two different types of operators. I've created some SQL operators and some virtualization operators, and I've scoped their access to the console. So let me show you how I did that. So I just leveraged the default operator role. I gave it a new name. I added an Active Directory group. By the way, you should very much leverage your core I/O infrastructure to do this, right? The rules don't change with how you manage Windows just because you're using a different product. You should very much leverage the group strategy and try not to use users because that's particularly tough to manage and document. So leverage your AD structure, create several groups if you have to mimic the logic of Operations Manager, but do leverage groups because then once you actually create the restricted access, you create it for the group, and then you handle your administration by group access, and that's really the way you should do it because that's the way you handle most Windows administration anyways. In this particular case, I haven't scoped the group at all. I've left the default in there, so that's fine. So he's not restricted by any class information that's coming in. However, I do care about what he sees when he gets into the Operations Manager console. So what I did is I went to the Dashboards and Views tab, and I've restricted him to specific views that I want him to see when he gets into the console. In this case, I've given him network access. I've given him access to SQL stuff, and I've given him access to the default views as well. So I've done the same thing using a virtualization operator role, but let me show you what that looks like using the console. So what I'm going to do is I'll just shift right click on the console so that I can run as a different user. And I'll launch using my SQL operator account. It's going to launch another instance of the console, only it's going to be a little different. Okay, now to get the, let me just explain what I can do as an administrator. I'm just going to show you this area down here. So this area here shows you the different workspaces that you have access to. As an administrator, I could see the administration pane. Different user roles can do different things. For example, if I'm an advanced operator or an author, I can access authoring. Everybody else can more or less just use monitoring or my workspace. If I want them to be report operators to have access to the reporting pane, I can add them to the report operators group as well. But what I did is I configured them as operators, so really they can only see monitoring and my workspace by default, and I've restricted what they can see. So let's actually see that console view. Okay, so notice now this is my SQL operator that I've logged in as, right? He can only see monitoring and only see my workspace. And he doesn't see all of the data that I was able to see, right? He sees the default views, like I suggested. So he sees active alerts, closed alerts, Windows computers. I didn't leave the inventory and the distributed apps view there. But I did give him access to information he should be concerned with, such as what's in the SQL Server Management Pack. And he's probably interested in some stuff to do with Windows Server as well. So I've actually added that. MySQL administrator cares about network monitoring as well. I've also given him access to that. Now, in these views, he's really just going... Now, I don't have anything wrong with SQL right now. Sorry, I'm showing you the Windows Server part. But since he does care with Windows Server, he is getting information on logical disk, right? So he's getting relevant information to his environment. We have a question in the back. So the question was, how close to real-time are the active alerts? The answer is it depends, right? If it's a rule that's doing the test, it's going to run on a schedule. So it depends on how that rule's configured for the schedule and frequency that it does the checks. If it's monitors, typically they're going to run in near real-time and get the information as they get reported back. Now, that said, information does get reported back in some multiple of the heartbeat, which gets done between agent and server as well. So it's pretty quick. It's not real-time, but it's pretty darn close. Okay? So there's default properties which are configured. You can actually make changes by leveraging what's called an override to change that schedule yourself, or if you were to create your own, which is authoring, we're not going too much into that, you can define all that stuff yourself at that point as well. Okay? All right, just let me make sure I covered what I wanted to. Okay, one more thing. So I did discuss health states and matching health states in that priority field. Let me show that stuff to you. So, okay. Let's say I can't show you with this guy because he's an operator, but I can from an administrator. So, okay, let's go back to my fragmented disk here. All right. So what I want to do is I want to show you the settings of the monitor that created this alert right here, which I'll do. Now, I'm just going to talk about a couple of areas. By default, in this particular case, I've got two health levels, right? I have healthy and I have warning. All right? So if the health state is, or if the alert severity is configured to match the health state of the object, the worst severity of an alert that'll come in is going to be warning. So if I've got a process around critical alerts that come in, this will never, by default, show up and take the same action as I've defined in my process. Now, that may not be the case, right? But I'm going to show you how to check that. In alerting, you can tell a couple of things. You can actually see how this is configured. So first of all, when this monitor trips, it is configured to generate an alert by default. Okay? The other thing is, now we know that it's got two health states. It's got healthy and it's got other, which in this case is going to be warning. And in this case, the default property is that it's going to trip an alert in warning state. Now that's not exactly matching the health state. There is the ability to do that, and I'll show that to you right now. If we look at overrides, and I were to override all the objects of class logical disk, I'll show you what I mean. So if I look at the alert severity here, this is what I mean. These are the choices, right? So I can actually configure this to match my monitor's health to go into warning, information, or critical. So if this particular issue is so important to me that I want it to act come out as a critical alert, I can change that and unlink what was done by default. That's where I'll actually make that change. And I mentioned using the priority field. That's also here. You can override it. You can make changes by using an override, or else you can... Sorry, we have a question. So the question was, is the best practice to put the overrides in another management pack? There's two types of management packs. The ones which are loaded by default, for the most part, are going to be sealed. If you actually make a change, you're not going to be able to save that change into a sealed management pack. So the best practice in this particular case would be to create an unsealed management pack and to save the change there. Now, that said, by default, there is a default management pack there for you, and it's unsealed. I don't recommend that you save your changes there, Because what happens is if you ever have to, A, inventory your changes, make changes to your changes, or just figure out what was done, that's going to become a knotted mess that you have to figure out. I strongly recommend that you create technology-specific unsealed management packs and save your changes in there. For instance, if you're overriding something to do with Windows 2008, you create a Windows 2008 overrides unsealed management pack, save your stuff there so that you can figure it out later and you've got everything relevant in its proper management pack or container, as the case may be. So the priority field that I was talking about, if we look on the general, it's not there, it's on the alerting tab. So I mentioned severity, that's here, and the priority, you can change this too with an override in exactly the same way, right? By default, the priority of this alert comes in as medium. You can change that and work with it as the case may be. Priority, once again, is one of the least used fields, but as such, you can actually use it to create a process around, and you don't have to make changes to severity. Now, you can use the two. You can use alert severity and alert priority and leverage a combination to create process as well, but there's some real value around using priority as well as just severity. Okay, so that's what I had to say about alerts. Let's go back to the slides. Okay, so we addressed management pack inventory and alerts. Now let's talk about notifications. So depending on how you do monitoring in the environment, a lot of customers that I use don't really have somebody sitting and watching the console all the time. So if that's the case, how are you going to get your monitoring information if you don't have people watching the console? Well, I mean, theoretically, I guess you could use the web console. You still have to have eyes on it, though, because there's the operations manager console that's there, but there's also the web console, which can just run out of a browser, as long as you have a user role configured, that you'll be able to see roughly the same information and act on it as you could in the operations console, but you still need eyes on the box. If you don't have eyes in the console at all times, you'll want to leverage notifications. Now, what notifications are is essentially a copy of an alert. So the alert information will come to the console one way or another, but it'll also leverage a notification channel, which can be, by default, the most popular notification channel is email. But you can also do SMS. You can also do IM. You can also do command. So you can leverage many, many, many different types of notification channel. But a lot of customers we see who don't specifically have people to monitor the console at all times do leverage the alerting system. So they get emails. Now, the work still needs to be done at the console level to restrict the information, and you still need to create some structure around what information gets forwarded out to your notification channels. And I'll talk a little bit about that. There's some criteria around that, but really the first line of work needs to be done around what goes to the console, because that's your default for what can come out as in form of a notification. You can prioritize issues using notifications. Now, for example, in the case where a customer only uses notifications as their primary source of monitoring, that's one way. But I mentioned that you can also leverage a system that top information you care about comes out in a secondary vehicle. So you've got your monitoring information that shows up in your operations console, but there are some issues that you really do care about. So let's say you have a process whereby help desk can't resolve the issue in 30 minutes. You absolutely want your tier 2 admins or your tier 3 admins to be emailed about that. You can leverage Operations Manager to create a process like that, or else any critical type alerts could flow through a notification channel as well. I'll show you a couple of approaches that we've used with customers for that. Okay, so I mentioned that notifications are essentially copies of alert, but they may contain different information. Now, the reason for that is, by default, more or less, you're going to see in a notification what you see in an alert. But you can unlink that at the notification channel level and change the format. Now, this is particularly important because in the case of using email for notifications, you can see a fair bit of information in an Outlook client that'll come into an email. That's fine. But on your BlackBerry or on your Windows phone, you don't have room for all those characters, right? So what you can do is you can leverage your notification channels and customize the message that's going to come out and the channel that it's going to come out so that if you get notifications to your mobile devices, that they look different than the, than what the alert looks like in the console. You can actually, you've got that ability to work with as well. Now, you can also configure notification subscriptions at several levels. So you can, it'll depend on the approach that you take. Many times for customers, if they don't have an idea for how to create notification subscriptions or how to approach that process, I will suggest that we define what is a critical alert, and we will work with that. We'll say whatever's critical will go out in your notification subscriptions. More often than not, what will end up happening is it's sort of a baking process. So the customer will live with that for some period of time, and then they'll get frustrated by what comes in, and they'll say, you know, some of this stuff is not relevant. Either I don't care about it, I won't do anything with it, or I just don't need to see it. And that's where you play with your process and you make your changes. Yeah? There's also that temporary situation I was talking about where you get information that comes into the console that you do care about, but you weren't getting emailed about it. You can actually create a notification subscription based on the ruler monitor that generated a specific alert and have a separate notification subscription configured for that. Now, once again, I suggest that process is temporary because it doesn't line up, it's not scalable. Okay, now, wouldn't it be great if we found out before the end of the world that something was wrong in our environment? Well, this is what Operations Manager gives you, right? It allows you to be proactive and not necessarily reactive. So you're getting information that comes into the console, and then you're creating your notification subscriptions to focus you to get your top priority information, and you're addressing that through process, okay? Same rule as with user roles. I recommend managing your notification subscriptions or your recipients for notifications using AD groups. Same deal. Okay, you can add users and groups as recipients and configure notification subscriptions attached to those. And you want to actually do some testing in your environment to make sure that the information that comes to your endpoints, in this case, excuse me, I'm not necessarily talking about an email that shows up in Outlook. I'm talking more about what shows up on your mobile devices, right? You may need to make some changes in what's there because it may not be visible or may not be relevant. You know, if the admin's driving in a car and he has to make a decision about whether to go home for another 45 minutes or turn around for 5 and go back to the office, you want that information to be quickly visible, probably in the header, something that'll tell him head back, right? Okay. So some common examples of approaches that we use with our customers for notifications are all severity critical alerts. That's one approach. We use it a lot, especially if they don't have a predefined idea of how they want to handle notifications. The other one is high priority alerts. Once again, a lot of my peers, I don't know why, don't really leverage that priority field. I actually think it's got tremendous value, especially if you do a management pack inventory and some time and thought is given to what rules and monitors are coming out of those management packs, you can really leverage that and create some structured process using that alert property or field. Okay, and then there's if you miss stuff, you can create that temporary-based notification subscription based on the alert or the monitor rule that created it. Or, for example, if you've got a SQL team and you want to give them you want them to be notified about anything to do with SQL, in the criteria for the notification subscription, you can actually go down and specify classes. And I'll actually show you. I've got an example of that right here. Or if you want to leverage escalation, you may want to leverage this property called alert aging, which I'll also demonstrate. So say alert's not closed or nothing's changed within a period of time, that that will trip and create a notification. Okay, so let me switch to that now. Excuse me. Okay. So for notification subscription, we drop to our administration workspace down here. And that's going to be a little bit higher up over here. Okay, we've got our three areas over here that we're concerned with when it comes down to notifications, right? We have our channels, our subscribers, and our subscriptions. The subscription is the piece where you actually define the criteria. The subscribers are who you're giving access to get notifications, and the channels are what vehicle that you're using or what technology to actually forward those notifications out. So what I'll do is I'll show you some example notification subscriptions that I have here. So here's that critical alert email notification subscription that I've got defined. What I'll do is I'll drop into the properties here. So it's called critical email notifications, and the criteria I have defined over here is of a specific severity. Okay? I've got a lot of other choices. I can actually choose by instance of a specific class, group, created by specific rules or monitors. I'm going to show you that's that temporary condition I told you about. Raised by an instance with specific resolution state for different types of alerts as well. With a specific name, specific text in the description. You can also leverage custom fields from the alert to create notification subscriptions. You can leverage combinations too, right? So if you have a lot of different processes, because you have many different groups or many different products that you're supporting, you've got a lot of flexibility in the notification subscriptions when you're actually defining your criteria and so forth. Okay, so from the subscribers portion here, you can actually pick your email notification recipients. Now those were defined before, or I get my notification subscription, I define who can actually receive those. I can add them here or I can make changes. So say for example, if I want to go and control the schedule, so in this case I've actually got a subscriber called email notification recipients, and I only want him to receive notifications from 9 to 5. Well, I can do that here, and I can control the schedule. Now, this is the same schedule that's defined for the recipient before I go and define a notification subscription, right? If he's got a schedule, that'll come through, but I can override it for the notification subscription so that he gets, in addition to the schedule he was using primarily, he gets it on this schedule as well. And then I've got my addresses and so forth. Now on the channels area over here, this is where I define how I'm sending out my notifications. So in this case, I'm using an email notification channel. And here's that property I was telling you about, alert aging. So if I want to be alerted if nothing has changed within some period of time to create some sort of escalation process, this is where I'll handle that. I'll use the alert aging property on the channels portion, and I'll configure my delay in minutes. Okay, so I've covered most scenarios here for notifications. So what I'll do now is I'll actually show you that scenario where we get something that comes in that we actually care about. Unfortunately, we know we care about it. We don't have a process around it to deal with it necessarily. It is a top priority. We want a notification subscription configured for it. This is how you do it. In my case, I really find that I do care about my fragmentation level. So what I want to do is I want to include that in the same process as, say, my all critical alerts. So what I can do is I don't have time to wait for the next change meeting, so I put it through an emergency change request, and this is my temporary fix. And what I'm going to do here is I'm actually going to create a notification subscription based on the rule or monitor that created this alert here. And you can see it here. It's already fired my create notification subscription. It's given me the name by default of the alert that came through. And now I can go through and configure that. And notice by default what it picked. It actually picked as criteria created by specific rules or monitors as the source. So this is how you handle those temporary situations. Okay, you can actually leverage the alert where the information came in, and you can and create a little bit of process around that. Now I suggest that you roll it into your general process, because creating many of these doesn't really scale. It just creates more work for documentation and so forth, but it can help you to get this monitoring under control temporarily. Okay, so that is notifications. All right. Okay. All right, the next portion I want to talk about is using the default canned reports that come in. So when you import management packs, a lot of stuff come in. You get different monitors and rules that come in that actually do the job of monitoring. Sometimes you get some run as accounts if you might need those to configure. You get some views. You might get a distributed app in there. You may also get reports for you to get information. Now, you can get information from several different places in Operations Manager. By default, the data that you get out of the console, that stuff is stored in the Operations Manager database, which is really meant for short-term storage. By default, it stores data for 7 days. Okay, so the stuff that you pull out of the console is really being pulled out of the OpsDB. It's really meant to be kept snappy so that you can get that information quickly and use it to help you out. If you need long-term data, that stuff is being stored in the data warehouse for Operations Manager. Okay, so when data comes into Operations Manager, there's a dual write. Data gets stored in the Operations Manager database, and data also gets stored in the data warehouse at the same time. The data warehouse is performing aggregations, though, behind the scenes to aggregate the data hourly and daily. And by default, you can keep data for 400 days in that data warehouse. You can change that, but that's the default. So it's basically, a year and a quarter for data warehouse. So if you need information that's there, that's been there for any time beyond a week's period by default, you're going to be getting out of the data warehouse. How do you do that? You need to get at it with reports. You can also do it with SQL queries, but you're not using the console or default tools if you do that. So the default, the easier way to do it is using reports, and if what's there suits you, then perfect. You want to leverage that as much as you can. The process of writing reports and creating custom reports is a very specialized skill. So using what's there will actually save you a lot of time if you can do it effectively. So reports are they're viewed and managed from that reporting space that I showed you inside the console. The thing is that now the management packs are getting better. So the management packs are getting better. The reports are actually better targeted to be relevant to what the data that you're actually trying to pull out. In the past, it's actually been sadly a complaint from many customers that the reports are there, but when I try to run them, I use whatever would be intuitive to me to get information from a report. It doesn't pull the data I want. Well, and what doesn't help is sometimes in the reporting space, the documentation that tells you how to use the report isn't always right. I mean, we've all run into scenarios where some of the documentation is not necessarily right, doesn't help matters. So there's got to be a more intuitive process. And I'm going to show you the process that I still use today. I used heavily in 2007. Even though the reports have been made better with the management packs in 2012, I still follow the same idea. And I use this idea of a starter object. And I'll show you how to do that in my demo. Now, reports are pretty flexible. So if you can reuse them and you don't have to go and drill through that class list more often than not, it's a better idea. So you can actually publish those reports Save them for quick access. You can share them by saving them to a management pack so one of your peers can access them or customize it as he needs. So you can make those changes. You can also schedule reports, right? Get some real benefit out of using that workspace. So a lot of people refer to reports as a monkey doc. You know, I don't refer to all my managers as monkeys, but anyway, as the case may be. All right, so the thing with using the reporting workspace, targeting isn't always obvious. There's a lot of classes in Operations Manager. So if I'm trying to run a report on server operating system performance usage, if it's a server operating system performance usage, I should just be able to target a server, and then the product should know, and then be able to intuitively do that. Now, it hasn't always been that simple. It's gotten, again, I repeat, it's gotten better, so I'm going to show you the process, but there are some older management packs that you still have to fight with a little bit to get the information as you need it to be. I'm also going to show you that concept of using a starter object. Many times, you can run a report from the monitoring space. So if the management pack has reports associated with it, you can get at them from the monitoring space. You don't actually have to go into the reporting space and deal with all these classes. If you run a report from the monitoring space, oftentimes it's been pre-targeted with the correct classes because they're associated in the management pack. So actually, there are some management packs I've used in customer sites that you can only run the reports from the monitoring workspace. The F5 management pack in particular comes to mind with that particular way of running the reports. If you want to get maximum benefit from your reports and you don't always want to have to go through and run them ad hoc, you can schedule them. Reports can be output in a variety of different formats. You can output them as CSV files, PDFs. You can output them as HTML documents. There's lots of different formats that you can output them. So you can run the report yourself and output it, or else you can put it on a schedule and leverage the SQL Server Reporting Services subscriptions to work on a schedule and actually run those same reports with whatever time frame that you put on a schedule and do things like increment the file name if you want to keep a history of different reports, or you can replace the old report each time if you choose. But running scheduled reports, one of the things that it's really nice for is that if you look at different reports of the same object over time, it's a great way for you to leverage some of the power in Operations Manager in that data warehouse to get some trending information. Right? I've helped a lot of customers figure out that they needed to upgrade their servers using trending reports like this. Right? So you're watching a particular metric, like say for example you're watching the disk queue, or you're watching whether or not there's paging going on, and you find out that only at a specific time frame there is. Maybe your server needs more RAM. Maybe you need more than one server load balance to handle these transactions. Using reporting is going to help you to make some of those decisions on getting the correct and right sized reports for your environment. Okay. So what I'll do is I'll flip into reporting. Okay. So by default, in the reporting workspace, most management packs that I have installed have some default reports. Like if I look in Active Directory, I've got some reports there. I look in Windows Server. I look in SQL Server. I look in IIS. I've got networking reports as well. Web application availability, that's pretty new. There's a lot of different reports that come in with the different management packs that you pull in. The ones I'm going to use mainly to show you demo is based on the Server 2008 operating system because the virtual machines that I'm working with in my environment all have Server 2008 R2 installed. So from the workspace, you can do things like publish your reports so that they show up for access by you later on under authored reports so that you don't have to go and choose all your criteria again. Or you can save them under favorite reports for you, same deal as Internet Explorer, right? You don't want to have to retype the URL, so you save it to favorites so you can for quick access. Or else, if I want to share the report, what I can do is once the report's been run, I can create a new management pack, and I can save it there so that my peers can come in and run the report that I've essentially created for them, and they can make changes too if they need to. Now, from the reports node, I can actually run reports pretty easily, but you still have to oftentimes know what you're doing. Let's say I'm interested in memory performance history. So I go into that report over here. Now, what I'll do is I'll change my aggregation to daily because I'm going to run it for a fairly long period of time. My starting point I'm going to do from this year, first day. And I can do it from 12:01 a.m. to now is fine. Now, if I want to add an object to report on, I just click on, so say for example I care about server 2008 objects. I'll type that in my search. And I'll get a list of objects that I can report on. Now again, it wasn't always this easy. In 2007 versions of this management pack, even if I typed server 2008, it would list all the classes, whether they be logical disks, memory, it didn't matter. So it wasn't always going to streamline and target the right thing and show me the server. In this case, it's a lot easier, so that's good. What I'm going to do is I'm going to pick to run the report on my Operations Manager server. I'll add him, click OK, and I can run that report. Here you go. So now you've got some reporting information for available megabytes and a history of it. If I want to get more details on that, because this is an aggregate total, I can click on the linked report and get that down here. And I can get view a little more details based on the actual measurements, and I can see the min-maxes and stuff like that. So it's pretty decent. It's gotten decently easy. It wasn't always like that. The process I prefer to show the customers to do, I'll show you how to do it right now, is I prefer to show them from the monitoring workspace. So what I'd have them do instead is go to the Windows Computers view, and what they could do is they could pick their server that they're interested in running the report. Assuming the report is targeted to Windows Computer class, everything I'm going to see over here on the right is already going to be targeted. Okay? So notice that I've actually got a list of reports over here. So I'm interested in that same one, available megabytes, which is right over here. Okay, so that's the same report, yet if I click on it, notice it's already pre-populated the server object. So I'm not going to run that report for you right now, but I can do it. It'll just produce the exact same result as the one that I ran in the reporting space. Now, okay, that's an okay way to do it for process. Now, if we want to scale that, okay, in this case, I know that everything's running on Windows 2008, so the reports are contained from the management pack that they're created for. It's important information for you, and I'll tell you why in a minute. What I like to show customers, because this scales, is a little bit of a bait and switch. So we've got the starter object over here, and what I'll do is I'll go to Add Group, and I'll type Server 2008, and I'll search for that, and I'll get a list of groups to do with 2008. So what I'll do is I'll actually pick my Windows Server 2008 group here, I'll add that, I'll click OK, and now what I'll do, because this group contains members that are all Windows computer classes, the report will run for them, but that's a dynamic group. So as servers get added or removed, I don't have to pick for individual objects anymore. So it's a pretty valuable report. So what I can do is I can remove the individual object. Now I'll go again and get my aggregate information. So I'll run it from this year. First day. I don't really have to change the time because I'm getting significant data here. And I'll run the report. So I'm getting a similar look and feel of a report, except that now I've got four objects running under there. It's not quite the same thing. So if I go into the details of the report, okay, I can now see that I've got the report for four different objects, and those objects are listed here. So what they are is essentially the report for the four different computers. Try to imagine this for multiples, 20, 30, 50, 100. Now, if I want to view the individual detail report, I'll go under Actions here, and I'll pick Performance Details for every object. And here we go. So now, what it's going to do, so in this case, it's running for this server. I've got the individual information. I go down, it's running it for a different server, and I've got the individual information. Now, what I can do at any level of the report is I can publish, export, save to management packs, save to favorites at any level I need for my colleagues, right? Or for myself to run later. And I can go back if I need to make changes by going to the top up here, just redisplay the parameter area, so I can run the report with different parameters, right? I can so notice it's actually reflecting the individual objects of the group because I'm actually running a detail report, but I can have that reflect as a group in the prior report as well. Okay? So that's some pretty good information, I think, that you can leverage on reporting. Oh, and by the way, I can schedule this stuff too, right? So back in the reporting, let me show you an example of a schedule I've already got, just quick before I hop into views. So here I'm running a performance by system. So if I look at the schedule that I've created over here, I've got it outputting to a Windows file share. If I want to output it to email as a channel, I can configure that using my SQL reporting services to enable it, and then email will show up as an available option for a delivery method. Then I need the file name that I'm going to output to, the UNC path, where it's going to go to, the output format, what's going to happen with the file name if more than one gets run, because it is on a schedule, and I need the username and password, of course, to access wherever I'm sending it. Creating an email, then the username is not given for the same reason. It's more because I have the right to forward out and into the Exchange server or so forth. Okay, so that is reports. So now we'll go into the last section over here. Okay, so what's important with regards to dashboards and views? Well, they're the window into what's going on in the environment. When you open the operations console, that's the first thing you're going to see, right, is the active alerts view. Well, actually, the first thing you're going to see is the state of the environment, but the very first thing under that is active alerts, and that's where most people go to get information. Those are views, okay? You've got different types of views that you can show. You've got alert view, state view, dashboard view, performance view, event view, web view. So you can get a lot of information out of those. You've also got the pretty popular diagram view to get information. And then you've got this concept of dashboards, which is pretty cool to get summary information out of the environment. What dashboards are is more or less they're placeholders for views. So what it is say, for example, you've got a help desk that's interested in how the Exchange environment's doing. What you could do is you could create a dashboard that, say, has the four most important views that your Exchange admins are looking at. And what you do is you would link those views inside the dashboard. And what I see customers do a lot is they will right-click on the view, they'll say open as a separate window, and they'll drag that to a separate monitor. So in this case of a help desk or department that does that, they may have a large screen at the front of the area where people always have eyes on it, and they'll just have that dashboard there. Okay, it's particularly useful and flexible in that way. Now, I showed you scoping user roles. So when you're scoping the user roles, of course, you can pick the classes and groups that they can get information from, but you can also choose the views and dashboards that they're able to get the information from as well, so that they're sort of restricted to information that is particularly relevant and actionable by their group, right? Now, actionable doesn't always have to mean fix the problem, could mean escalate to the appropriate team, as the case may be, or as your business process defines it. Alert views are not where you get everything. It doesn't give you the whole picture. It gives you some quick information. But in particular, state views do get give you information as well. Remember I showed you inside the alert in the general properties that, or sorry, in the monitor that created the alert, in the general properties that not all monitors by default alert, right? They will impact the health state of an object, but it's not necessarily true that they'll generate an alert by default. Now, once again, your management pack inventory will key you into that stuff pretty early. Different dashboards will help different people. So not all dashboards are relevant to everybody, in the same way as not all views are relevant to different people. It's the scoping exercise, really, that you'll leverage to get relevant information to the right people. Different people care about different things. As information is represented to them that they care about, then they can operate it and they can be more effective. Okay, so I've got time to show you that demo on dashboards and views, so I'll do that now. Excuse me. Okay. So I've actually, I've got some views that I've created over here. Now, okay, the default views that you'll use, of course, are alert views by typically. So we showed you the active alert views. The state view is also a good place for you to get information very quickly. So in this case, I've actually got agents deployed to 4 managed servers, and I can get a bubble up health state for those servers right in this view. So in this particular case, on my domain controller, I've got a warning state. So what that typically means is that that is the worst state of any member underneath. If I want to get a snapshot of what's creating that, I'll go to the Health Explorer, and it'll very quickly show me why it's demonstrating a warning condition. So in this case, it's coming down to some sort of a DNS problem. So I can very quickly, like a bullet, get to the what is actually creating that non-healthy state of the object, right? And if I want to get detailed information on that, I can go into the detailed view in Health Explorer, and it'll show me everything that's actually being monitored that bubbles up to the computer class, since I've targeted Windows computer, and I can get details on any one of those monitors and default settings and what's been overridden and so on and so forth. So that's a state view. Now, other views that are particularly interesting are things like performance. So speaking about the DC, if I choose to open a performance view based on that computer, it's actually going to show me, of course, as targeted to computer, all the performance counters that are available to that system. So let's say, for example, I'm interested in percent processor time. I can pick that counter over here, and it'll display what's been measured over time. So here you go. Now remember, this can only go back 7 days, because the information that's coming out of this is what's out of the console. If I want anything older, got to go to the data warehouse. I need to get at it from a report. Okay? Other view of interest that could be important is a diagram view. So in this case, if I look under distributed applications, I could actually look at the diagram view by default for my Active Directory. So let's open up the diagram view. And here you can see that the elements which are, again, it's kind of like a Health Explorer, but it's more graphical in nature, so it's visual, and it'll quickly get you the information. So here we go. This is a diagram view. Okay, last bit that I wanted to show you was on dashboards. So dashboards are more or less just a shortcut to or placeholder for views. I built a test dashboard over here where I've actually created linking for test alerts and for test state view. In my dashboard, I could have created any format. Say, for example, if I look at the default network dashboard over here, this one's got links to different views that are important as it pertains to the network management pack. So here I've got nodes with slowest response, highest CPU, highest utilization, so on and so forth. I see there's a question. However, we're right at the end of the session. I'm going to have to take that offline. I apologize for that. But I will take your question in just a minute. Okay, so... All right, so that was dashboards and views. So again, if you want, I hope this session had value to you folks. I hope you enjoyed it. If you have any questions, I'm going to be out around at the expo area for a bit. I'm going to go there after my session. I'll be around this week as well. My name is Brad Bird. I work for Systel as a system center and VM architect. Hope you enjoyed the session. Please remember to fill out your evals. Thank you.